This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more, and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Frothy, home with a fun, frivolous, low-brow froth that your group chat excels at. We're here to talk about the best things in the world of pop culture, from celebrities to influencers and all of the nonsense in between. And you're joined by me, Elle, a London-based 27-year-old writer who spends a lot of time chatting and reading about the fun, silly topics that maybe your boss, your parents, your partner, whoever, questions why you enjoy so much. Each week, we're going to be talking about the best bits that pop culture has to offer, and this is your safe space to enjoy, dissect, and binge on the frothy nonsense that brings you a smile. Hello, everybody. How are you all doing? I'm going to let you into a little secret. It is my birthday in a couple of weeks, so I will no longer be a 27-year-old writer, and I don't know how I feel about announcing to the world that I'm 28. That feels scary. So we might just chop that line. I mean, it's ingrained in my head. I don't know if I could say the whole thing without saying the line, because it's just part of the flow and it just sort of rolls out my face at this point. But we shall see. So if that line disappears, you know I've turned a little bit older. I'm a little bit wiser. I've gone around the sun one more time. We shall see. That aside, it has been a interesting week in the world of pop culture. Some really, really headline-worthy events, and some also just thoroughly just froth nonsense that I wanted to talk about too. So let's dive right in with the best of the brain rot, which are the silly stories that got us talking this week. First up, folks, I wanted to talk about Millie Bobby Brown and the headlines and waves she's made this week with an Instagram video. Basically, she's taken to Instagram to call out journalists who have been commenting on her appearance during or on her most recent press tour. The video is about 3 minutes long. It's currently sitting at 5.4 million likes. And in it, she named and shamed several articles and the journalists who wrote them, calling them desperate to tear young women down. The articles include "Why Are Gen Zers Like Millie Bobby Brown Aging So Badly?" by Lydia Hawken. "What Has Millie Bobby Brown Done to Her Face?" by John Eli. "Millie Bobby Brown Mistaken for Someone's Mum as She Guides Younger Sister Ava Through LA" by Cassie Carpenter. And "Little Britain's Matt Lucas Takes Savage Swipe at Millie Bobby Brown's New Mummy Makeover Look," written by Bethan Edward. Horrendous titles, like really just they're holding absolutely no punches. In the video itself, Millie goes on to say that the articles aren't journalism, they're bullying, and the dissection of her face, body, and choices is disturbing. She also points out that the fact that so many of these were written by women makes the actions all the worse. And she has been so passionate about pushing back on this critical rhetoric that she has ensured her voice was thoroughly heard by making sure that her caption is almost a word-for-word transcription of what she says in the video. It's a very, I don't want to use the word vulnerable, it's a very down-to-earth video. She's sat in a hoodie, her hair is down, she's not wearing any makeup. It's a selfie-style video that she's obviously just sat in the corner of her house and filmed. I would say sort of just got up and filmed and given little to no thought to it. Very natural. That obviously isn't the case because she has prepped what she wanted to say and she is clearly reading it as she says it. But I don't think that takes away from the video itself. And I think it also demonstrates that it highlights her age. She looks really rather young in the video. She is in her early 20s. And I think there's a real strength in coming to the fight or to this discussion. Looking so naked is also the wrong word, but so like clearly herself. And, you know, she's not dolled up. She doesn't have, I guess, you know, her battle armor on that would be the dress, the makeup, the hair that you wear on the red carpet. She's coming to us as authentically herself. Maybe that's a better word, authentically. And comments on the post have been limited too. So she's protecting herself with this video in sort of like two ways. A, standing up for herself, and B, making sure that people can't tear her down too much for it. That being said, people have been very supportive of Millie, and certainly the comments I saw, she was being back as opposed to critiqued further. I really respect putting the video up. I can't imagine how, I mean, I think back to where I was at 21. I was living in Australia. I was very shy, rather nervous, having a whale of a time. But if someone had told me to walk a red carpet and confidently deal with the press, confidently and coherently, I guess, deal with the press, it wouldn't have happened. It absolutely wouldn't have happened. I was just about making it to uni lectures. I wasn't, that was the peak of my travels. And even then I was struggling. So I love that she stood up and defended herself. I think absolutely the right thing to do. And I think incredibly brave. And I'd be really interested to know the thought process behind that with her team. Given that we have, of course, seen obviously slightly scripted thought processes with teams and stars in things like Taylor Swift's documentary films. So it's not quite as off the bat as it appears, as we obviously know because she is reading. But I also would wonder who pushed for her to make the pushback video and who was maybe more apprehensive about it. I really believe that it was Millie whose idea it was and who pushed to do it because at the end of the day, she is the one being targeted here. And that in itself is all interesting and newsworthy and worthy of a discussion, absolutely. But I think what adds to this discussion is that we are in the age where journalists can, on their own platforms, push back or add to the conversation. And this is exactly what has happened. So Lydia Hawken, who was the first journalist named by Millie, so she's the one that wrote, "Why are Gen Zers like Millie Bobby Brown aging so badly?" And that was an article for the Mail. It was about quote-unquote tweakments that young celebrities have had. And Lydia is someone I follow on TikTok. She talks about pop culture and celebrity, and it interests me, hence why I do this podcast. But I follow her completely unaware that she was involved in any of this. And she also made a video about the situation and apologised repeatedly throughout to Millie for the pain and upset she had caused. So to give a bit of background, Lydia freelances for Female, which is the lifestyle section of the Mail Online. And according to the video, those that freelance for Female work on a rota system. So the days you're working, you come in and you obviously can pitch like any press office, but you also sometimes are given briefs and stories the editorial team would like you to write. This happens across sort of the journalism world. This isn't unique to Female. It's something that happens at my work. You know, sometimes I pitch and sometimes I'm told what I'm writing. And the article in question that Millie has picked up is one that Lydia says she didn't pitch. It was one that she was requested to write. And it was all about these supposed tweakments that Millie has received. And it was basically a piece where Lydia spoke to experts about the small work that Gen Z were getting, beauty work, bark on their faces, nips and tucks, I guess you could call it, and discussion about what Millie potentially had and hadn't had done. She points out that not only was this story one she was told to write, not one that she was pitched, she also had no editorial control over the headline. And while they are her words, they're her words as requested by her boss. She says that Millie is in the right and that she's sorry for not being brave enough to have said no to the article. Since being named by Millie in this video, she's received death threats, received threats to her family, and she says it's been the wake-up call that she's needed, and it's the last time that she'll be writing a story that isn't authentically her, and that she's actually resigned from the Mail. And her comment section is horrendous. There are a few who have given support, mostly those, it seems, who work in journalism, comms, PR, and who understand a little more about how this world of work works. But the majority, and the huge majority at that, are people who are not taking her at her word, are telling her that, you know, nope, there's no way in hell you would have had to write something you didn't believe in. This is entirely you. You have a history of doing this, referencing past articles she's done for the Mail, and basically saying that her apology and her argument, or not even argument, her apology and her explanation are just like codswallop and don't hold any value. And this is really interesting to me as somebody who, I mean, I write without a byline. You don't know what I write. It's on the internet. For things like this, I'm incredibly grateful for that, because I think it's really hard when you're given a story you don't want to write that you do have to write because, you know, contractually that's your job and that's what you're there to do, but that you don't necessarily believe in, or you don't find interesting, or you don't think is going to work with the readership, but that is what you have to do. And I guess I'm hidden a little bit by that anonymity, whereas in this case, Lydia was absolutely not, and so is paying the repercussions of her boss's decisions. Well, you know, on the flip side, her bosses are benefiting hugely because this article has gone absolutely viral because Millie is such a force. So they were obviously banking on Millie's name to do a lot of the heavy lifting in the original article, and Millie has now called it out by name, and therefore it has, I mean, I imagine the clicks through to their website will be absolutely off the charts, and the read on the article itself will have been like nothing before. So they're benefiting hugely, and poor Lydia has been completely like left in the dark and left to sort of deal with this by herself, it sounds like. And I really respect the fact she's resigned from the Mail. I think it's really, really tricky because we've all been there. At the end of the day, yes, these articles are presenting and supporting a damaging rhetoric, and they are very unkind, and it is not fair whatsoever to put people, anybody, Millie Bobby Brown included, in the spotlight like this. But I don't think Lydia should be the point of anyone's anger. I think it's the editorial team and above, at these newspapers and magazines and wherever else they're being printed and published, that should be the ones taking the heat. And instead, because of bylines, it's absolutely not the case. So what I think I'm saying is that I feel for both these women, and I feel for all the other journalists who have been requested to write these stories by those above them on the sort of career ladder. Both are in the right, and it's the shitty decisions by editorial teams and above that effectively, you know, end up just damaging everyone but themselves, and it annoys the hell out of me. I'm not going to rant about it anymore, but let me know what you think. You know, do you side more one way or the other? That's totally fine if you do. Everyone's got an opinion, but I think coming from this world can really see both sides of the coin, and it feels like an impossible situation because those truly responsible and the I guess the evil masterminds, completely the wrong word, but you know what I mean, behind it all, are not the ones that have been dragged into this conversation, which is more than frustrating. And it's like lighthearted and frivolous, and that is that Glastonbury's lineup has been announced. There are some really big names, including Charlie XCX, Noah Kahan, Doechii, Gracie Abrams, Wet Leg. For a real throwback, there's the Scissor Sisters, the 1975 are headlining for the first ever time, and Olivia Rodrigo is playing at the festival on the Pyramid stage. Big names, names that are regularly in the charts. I mean, bar the Scissor Sisters, but they're a classic. I am not going, I won't lie. I'm an absolute Glastonbury novice. I have never been. I've never even tried to get tickets. because it is such a battle. And I take my hat off to you if you're one of the people who tries to get tickets or who goes and tries to get tickets every year, because it is, I think it's worse than trying to get Taylor tickets. And that was a fight and a half. So I'm impressed if you do it. But really showing my like lack of Glastonbury know-how here is that apart from knowing it's the biggest music festival we have here in the UK, I had no idea that everybody was buying their tickets blind and that you had no idea who was playing when you bought the tickets. You were just kind of hoping that people you liked, or, you know, at least one person you liked was playing each day, which is a real gamble because there's a lot of music out there. And I mean, I guess if you're a music buff, it doesn't really matter. And you're also going for like the experience of the fun of it all and to like go to such an iconic festival with your friends. So I get it, I guess. But brave. I think that's really, really brave. That being said, I thought the lineup this year looked really, really good. But it appears I'm in the absolute minority with that. Colleagues, we talked about it when it was announced the other day, and nobody at work seems to be overly impressed by the lineup. I'm not sure maybe if because a lot of my work friends are kind of 30 plus, so don't definitely sort of fall out of the Gen Z age bracket. And The Independent, who wrote about the lineup, said that it's a very Gen Z focused list of performers this year, which is obviously not a category my colleagues fall into. I don't know if that's why they're not vibing with the lineup or if they really just have obscure music taste. I'm not quite sure. But it seems that they're absolutely not alone. Somerset Live, which is an online newspaper that I have never read. I mean, I have now, but I haven't read it since and I hadn't read it before. They collected a series of complaints from Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, talking about the lineup and basically just a collection of how upset people were with the festival. So I'm going to read a few just to give you sort of a little taste of what's going on. One person said, "Hate to say it, but Glastonbury is a shadow of what it once was. It's absolute crap. This has to be one of the worst lineups ever, surely." Somebody else said, "That Glastonbury lineup."
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter. Hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
And that is shocking. It normally gets worse each year, but that is one huge leap into shit. The 1975 headlining is worse than just getting Coldplay back for the 42nd time. So, you know, a real slap in the face for those who booked it and organised the festival. I'm quite proud to be going against the tide here. I think they did a great job. So you have my praise, even if nothing else. But yeah, there's not much more to say on it, apart from this interesting point that was made by entertainment reporter for Sky News, Debbie Rigard, who pointed out that she thinks the lineup suggests that organisers are steering away from having like a main stage and are looking to spread out the festival crowd like across the site. Which explains why we have Charlie XCX playing on the other stage at the same time as Neil Young playing on the Pyramid stage. And also why we have Olivia Rodrigo and the 1975 playing at the same time too. So I think they've got the big name acts and then they're putting them on together to try and split crowds, divide the audience, you know, create some competition to, I guess, reduce the wear and tear on the fields. I mean, that being said, the fields, we see the photos year on year, they're always just absolutely wrecked. I mean, it's impossible not to be wrecked with the state of it all, with the size of the festival. But I thought it was an interesting point, a different angle to what I'd seen other people talking about, which was more vibe-focused and music-focused. So, yeah, nothing much more to add. I just thought it was interesting, and I thought you'd find it interesting too. And then, guys, the news I never thought I would talk about, and that is that Mummy Pig, who is obviously a children's cartoon character and mother to Peppa and George Pig on the TV show Peppa Pig, was interviewed on Good Morning Britain this week And I mean, I take my hat off to the presenter who managed to keep a straight face throughout. That is some seriously good work. But yeah, she came onto the show to announce that they are having another baby due in the summer. And this announcement comes 21 years after the show first aired. So, you know, as is normal for a cartoon, Pepper and George have been children for decades. And honestly, the seriousness of, like, that was applied to this announcement has just been next level. The effort and the whole concept is entirely unhinged, if you ask me, and I love it. I think it's hysterical. Yeah, so Mummy Pig told Good Morning Britain, I'm going to quote here, that she's due in the summer and that we're all so excited, a little overwhelmed at the thought of having three children under five running around, but mostly just completely delighted. And fair enough. If you've had two under five for 21 years, adding three under five for another 21 years, I think that's a lot to ask of anybody, fictional or not. She went on to say, we weren't able to keep it a secret for long. Pepper knew something was going on and she's such a curious thing. We had to tell her before she popped. And you guys, I haven't been able to get away from this news. It was on BBC Radio 4 one evening this week. I've seen various content creators talking about it. Some making the joke that, you know, at least Daddy Pig's getting some action. Some making the joke that, you know, Peppa Pig has such a grinding personality. They're hoping that, you know, this new baby knocks her down a peg or two. And I cannot get over the reaction this news has had, and also the way they went about sort of announcing this news. If you'd asked me last weekend whether or not I thought a fictional cartoon character having a baby or announcing a pregnancy was going to be big news, no, I would absolutely say absolutely not. I completely underestimated the level of reaction this has. I guess if it had been announced that, I don't know, Family Guy or American Dad or bringing in a new cast member that was a child or a baby, maybe I could see it. I think I could understand a bigger reaction there than a children's cartoon character, but I've been proven completely wrong in that. I obviously have no gut instinct about children's cartoons, and I guess fair enough, I don't watch them. But I'm incredibly impressed. I'm also quite curious as to how they're going to go about announcing the birth. How they're going to decide whether or not they're having a boy or a girl, and the name there. Obviously, it's pretty popular for cartoon families aimed at children to have a son and a daughter to obviously connect with their young audience, and that's it. I mean, I guess like Charlie and Lola, there's just Charlie and Lola as far as I remember. Arthur and DW, just Arthur and DW as far as I remember. Like, you know, one of each. It doesn't really matter who's older or who's younger, is the impression I get. But adding another child into the mix is a big dynamic shift. So I guess there's been lots of discussion behind the scenes about whether or not that's a benefit. But my understanding is that they're playing on the fact that so many of their audience will be having a younger sibling arrive at some point during their childhood years. And it's encouraging these little ones of the children to think positively about that change in home life as opposed to outrage that their reality and norm is being uprooted and reshifted. I would love to tell you that I'm going to keep a close eye on this and report back as and when this baby is born. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but I'm not going to. I don't think I've got it in me to watch Peppa Pig. I don't have the time to watch Peppa Pig. If it makes another big splash, maybe I'll talk about it. But just, I don't know, I have enjoyed it. I think the level of unhinged is just next level, and it has given me a giggle or two, so hopefully it's given you a giggle or two too. And if you do see people talking about Mummy Pig and Mummy Pig being pregnant and you're not sure who it is, there you go. It's a child's cartoon character. It's not some sort of content creator with an interesting name or celebrity with a stage name. And there's something very silly to finish the frothy news cycle on this week, guys. And that is that the UK's Eurovision song has been announced. It's by the band Remember Monday, and it's titled What the Hell Just Happened. It's supposedly crossing a few different genres, country, pop, and musical theatre. And I think it's best described as very Eurovision-y, which I know is not a word, but if you've seen the show before, you'll understand what I mean. And I'm not going to lie to you, having heard it once, it's not my favourite song. I don't think I'll be listening to it again. My overwhelming reaction to it was that it was quite singy, shouty, if that makes any sort of sense, and there weren't a lot of lyrics. I mean, there doesn't necessarily need to be a lot of lyrics, but what the hell just happened is repeated quite regularly throughout the song. I think it is the entire chorus. I could be wrong, but that's what I've been left with. That was the experience I walked away from it with. And I don't think it's going to win us an improved position in this competition. We're always in the bottom half. I think minus Sam Ryder's 2022 song, which got us like second place. We did really well with Sam Ryder. But apart from that, we are regularly in the bottom half of the entries. And, you know, that's good. That's where we're used to being. That's our happy place. I think we're staying there this year, if I'm going to be entirely honest with you. I'm not suggesting you go and listen to the song because I don't think it's worth your time. If you do like it, that's great. It obviously is popular enough that it was picked, but it's not for me, which is a shame because the band itself is really quite successful. Last year, they were recognised as Best Trio by the British Country Music Association. They've toured the US as well as the UK, and they've got hundreds of thousands of streams on Spotify. So they're well established. They're good at what they do. I do not like the song. But again, music is subjective. It's all for everybody. Take it or leave it. Eurovision is a special sort of beast. And I don't want to lose any more listeners by bashing it too harshly. But I mean, yeah, I guess let me know what you think. But don't rush to listen if you're busy. It's not high on the priority list, if I'm going to be honest with you. Alrighty, and then it's time for Popped a Pen, which is something I have shadowed out this week that's caught my eye and then I'm hoping to come back to. Last week, I talked about Cameron Whitcomb, who is a musician, and I was targeted with like an Instagram ad or a TikTok ad. I can't remember now. Either way, they knew their audience. They came, they swooped. I was well and truly hooked. I have now listened to so much of this man's music, and I wouldn't say he's got a huge discovery, but I have listened to the songs of his on repeat so consistently for like the last week or so that if this man is not on my Spotify Wrapped, it's because there is some sort of cataclysmic event happening in the next sort of 8 months for me to massively sway my music tastes and therefore massively interrupt my planned Spotify Wrapped, because I'm hooked and I hope you are too. I realise it's not for everybody, but if you do like his music, buckle in, because it's an earworm. They stick. I cannot get Medusa out of my head for love nor money. I'm pretty certain it's following me around in my dreams. And then, of course, this week's Popped a Pin is, and I'm late to the party, guys, and I know I'm late to the party, life is busy, but Meghan Markle's Netflix show, With Love, Meghan, because I've not seen it yet. I have seen countless reviews, obviously on both sides, and I think it's obviously very important to say that there is a very strong, very prominent, slightly scary anti-Meghan rhetoric that sits, well, that's present in the press, but that it's also completely present in, like, you know, your average day-to-day conversations with, well, everybody. Like, I hear it from any age group, any, like, career path, any social circle I'm in, there's always somebody with some very strong opinions about this poor woman. That doesn't resonate with me. I do not feel the same way. I would very, very strongly say I am not in the anti-Meghan camp. But obviously with this show, they have risen up again. And yeah, so I've not seen it yet, but I have seen all the stuff that they've talked about. I've also seen the people who are much more pro-Meghan talk about it. I get the impression that what you take away from the show is kind of shaped by what you go into the show with and your feelings towards Meghan, but I have not watched it yet, so that is next on my list. I plan to watch some this week and I'll come back to you, maybe even do like a bit more of a deep dive, although already for the next Frosty I think things are kicking off, guys. There is a few pots that I've had brewing in the background that are really beginning to simmer now, so we shall see, but either way it will be mentioned next week. And then finally, guys, some recommendations to close off the show. There are two this week, as there often are, and I've got something to eat and something to watch, so they go hand in hand if you're in that kind of mood. I might have said the exact same thing last week, which was, again, something to eat, something to watch. I think we can tell I'm living a somewhat stagnant lifestyle at the moment, and that's okay. We all have those weeks and months, and I am right there in it. But this week I have watched, well, I've not quite finished it, but I am watching Toxic Town on Netflix, which is a British drama based on a true story about a town in Britain that in the 70s or 80s, they had their factory, manufacturing plant. I'm not quite sure of the right terminology here, but they tore it down and they didn't do so correctly, or they didn't take quite the right safety precautions. And as a result, the pollution spread across the town and was incredibly harmful to babies developing in the womb. And as a result, the children born in like the subsequent months were incredibly unwell. Some were missing limbs, and it just like devastated families. And this is the story of some of those families and the journalists that sort of cottoned on to the fact that things weren't quite right in this town. And it is incredibly good. It is got Amy Lou Wood in it. It's got the actress who plays Eloise in Bridgerton, whose name I've completely forgotten. It's got a couple of really recognisable regular faces in British dramas, which is not a helpful description to anybody who doesn't watch a British drama. But if you know, you know. And I am really enjoying it. I mean, I love a British drama. We do it really well, I personally think. It's the type of thing that me and the girls I live with at uni would have sat down and watched on a random weekday night. And I miss those days. I loved those days. So this has taken me right back there as well. I can't recommend it enough. I think if you're looking for something that's not too cheesy, not too heavy. It's a bit heavy, but you know, it's manageable. This is the thing for you. I can't recommend it enough. And then my second recommendation is Ben and Jerry's Banoffee ice cream. My boyfriend bought this over for me earlier this week at the weekend, and I have inhaled it. I mean, we shared a lot of it together, but there was some left over and it didn't last, let me tell you. I mean, I love anything Banoffee flavoured. I'm a big fan at the moment of bananas. Can't tell you why, just cannot get enough. And this was incredible. And I don't know, it's been such a find, and I want another tub already. So, you know, get your Ben and Jerry's, put on Toxic Town, have a wonderful evening. I think you'll enjoy. And that's it for this week, guys. If you got this far, as always, thank you so, so much. We've grown slightly in listenership recently. I don't know where you've come from, but thank you. Welcome. Hello. I hope you stick around to the end. No worries if not, though. I get it. Everyone's busy. If you want to support the show, then please subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. It really helps us in the charts. And you can find more absolute nonsense and silliness and general froth on TikTok and Instagram at Fruity Podcast. Have a lovely week, guys, and I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.